Welcome into Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. 713 call now. This is our best of version, and tonight we take you back to some of our favorite interviews of the year 2023. We have proudly brought soccer talk to the radio in Houston since 2001. Let's get started. Great opportunity now to catch up to what is a great story. Many people already know this gentleman. He is Jeff Lunau, now of the Blue Crow Sports Group, who own both Cancun FC in the second division, technically, in Mexico, and Leganés in Spain in the second division as well. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on.
Of course. It's a pleasure to talk to you about what else is going on in football in Houston besides the Dynamo. Dynamo had a great season. Congrats to everybody involved. Obviously didn't achieve the final goal, but getting to the Final Four was pretty amazing.
Yes, tremendous turnaround, and we appreciate that. And I'll ask you about MLS a little bit later in this interview, but let's just start off first with Cancun FC. They're in Liga Expansión, which is the second division. You guys win the title. I mean, this is a monumental moment here, an exciting moment for your group.
It really is. Cancun has only seen one football title, and it was for the team that came from Mexico City called Atlante. They spent a few years in Cancun. They won a championship there, but then they went back to Mexico City. So this is a big milestone for a lot of reasons. Cancun has never had a homegrown team win a championship in any sport. And this is, you know, obviously the king of sports in Mexico is football. And to be able to win a trophy against really tough competition. The team that we beat, funny enough, is the team that had won the championship before Atlanta. And they're a they've got five stars on their logo because they've won five championships. So it was not an easy task. But so Cancun won its first championship for a homegrown team. And Blue Crow Sports Group now has one championship under our belt. We have not only the team in Cancun, we have a team in Spain, and we've got a team in Czech Republic and a team in United Arab Emirates, and probably a few more coming. But the first one is always the sweetest, as it was with the Astros when we won in 2017. And it's a memory that the players and the fans are going to cherish the rest of their lives for sure.
Jeff Lunau joining us of Blue Crow Sports Group. Cancun FC in the first leg, 0-0 with Atlante, ironically, as you mentioned, and then 3-0 in the second leg back in Cancun to win the title. You know, so you mentioned the team in the Czech Republic, the United Arab Emirates, obviously Cancun FC in Mexico, Leganés in Spain, who, by the way, is also in first place for my listeners right now. We'll get into them. But what's the end game here? To come in here, build these teams up, and I would sense get them to the first division, right?
Yes, we're very competitive. We like winning. Obviously, the goal of any division lower than the first division is to get your team promoted and move up. And that is... that's our goal for MFK Vyškov in the Czech Republic. That's our goal for Leganés in La Liga. And that's our goal for Cancun FC in Liga de Expansión. Now, in order to do that, you have to win. And the rules have to allow for you to go up. In Leganés, it's pretty straightforward. If we end up first or second this year, we will be in La Liga next year. And right now, our chances are decent because we're in first place, even though there's a long way to go. Same thing, MFK Vyškov is in first place at the break. If we continue to win, we will get promoted automatically. Mexico's a little more complicated because they froze relegation and promotion about 5 years ago, right before COVID. And technically, it's open again. However, there's not enough certified teams for a team to go up this year. So even though we just won the title, and even if we win the title in the Clausura tournament, which starts in January, we will at this point, the rules will not allow us to be promoted. But the good news is that for the next cycle, starting this summer, we anticipate there's going to be at least four teams, probably more like six or seven, that are going to be certified. And at that point, you know, if you do win, you will get a chance to go up. So that's our goal. Part of why it's important that we won this year is because we have to make some significant investments in infrastructure in order to be certified. And, you know, last few years, we've had a below average team in terms of table placement. And we wanted to demonstrate that we could actually win the league. And we've done that. So now we've got a little bit more confidence in making the investments that we need to make to get the team to the first division.
Jeff, how much is data play into, you know, everybody knows you as somebody who is remarkable with data. Does data apply to soccer to you the same way it did to baseball?
It's different. And I think it's, you know, you don't have a batter pitcher matchup to study where it's one against one. As you know, it's 11 v 11, and every one of those 11 matters relative to the other 11. So it's a much more complicated dynamic happening on the pitch. That being said, I think in the last 10 years, we've seen a lot of advances in terms of developing analytics and using analytics for clubs. And for us, though, the we are investing in all of that. We've got a technology data analytics group based in London that has people here in Houston and in Dubai and in Madrid. For us, the important thing is using technology to develop players, helping players identify their strengths and weaknesses, helping the coaching staff work with those players to address the weaknesses and to enhance those strengths. And, you know, the biggest difference for me between the world of football and the world of baseball is that you can get to the big leagues at the age of 24, 25 and still have a Hall of Fame career. In the world of football, if you're not with the first team by the time you're 19, you're sort of, you know, that train is, I'm not going to say you can't be a good player. There's a lot of good players that come up after that, but really the elite players all, you know, basically start playing at the top levels at the age of 18, 19, which means if you have a 16-year-old prospect in your system, you have to develop that athlete in 24 months or 36 months. Otherwise, they're going to lose that opportunity to be one of the truly elite players. And so how we use technology and coaching and all the things to develop the young players, that's really going to be, I think, Blue Crow's calling card and where we think we're going to differentiate ourselves.
So the data is important in it, but you also have to have the staff that can implement, yes, that are good teachers that can hone down on, you know, maybe it's a guy's a good dribbler, but he's not a penetrator. So how to get behind, you know, somebody who's marking him one-on-one. So you have to have the staff. How did you find your staff in Mexico?
So we currently have a Mexican coach who's elite. I think he's the youngest coach in the entire Mexican football pyramid, and we think he's got tremendous potential. This is the third coach we've had since we acquired the team, and I think there's a certain profile. We've been adjusting what we're looking for, and we've also been evaluating a lot of different candidates, and I think we finally landed on the right spot, which is clearly experience, you know, playing and coaching the game is important, but also an open-mindedness to the fact that there may be some other information out there and players that come from outside the country that could help. And I think we landed on exactly the right profile with Luis Arce in Mexico. But he gets a lot of support. His staff is really good, and we support him from Houston. We support him from our office in London. And we help him define and refine his playing model, because everything starts with the playing model. And, you know, clubs have playing models that they find a coach to accommodate. And then there's other clubs that bring in a coach, and whatever playing model he has, they're going to have to live with. We're sort of a hybrid. We have some philosophies of our organization, but we understand that Mexico is a very unique market. Cancun's a unique market. The coach is going to have his own point of view. So we kind of have a mixed model. But once we define the model, then we organize the entire recruitment and development structure to fine tune the players so that they fit that model. And that's kind of been where we use a lot of the technology and data and analytics to help define exactly what our center back needs to do, exactly what our left winger needs to do, and then to go out and recruit for those and also to develop those in our own system.
So it's a blend of both. It's a blend, yes, of having your structure in place and then finding players that will adapt to it right away and then teaching others to then be a part of the game model. Okay, so I was very interested. You found a guy named Asami Traore, who's a very young guy from Burkina Faso. Tell me the story, yes, about him.
We have a partnership with a group that has been recruiting and finding good young players in Africa for over a decade. And that partnership has led to us bringing players to Cancun. We've had five or six players from Africa come to Cancun. And I got to tell you, the first couple players that arrived, the response from the folks locally was, you know, African players in Mexico, the transition is too hard. There's not a really good track record. They don't play tactically the same way that Mexicans do. It's going to be really difficult. Yes, they have athleticism, but they're never going to learn the game to be able to compete in the Mexican pyramid. And that, I think we've proven that narrative to be false. Traore came to us a year ago. He was a sub last year. He became a starter last tournament. And then this tournament, he's basically started every single match. And, you know, we basically brought him back from winger to left back. He's got offensive capabilities, but we figured that a player like him, left backs are so hard to find in the MLS and Liga MX and in Europe. We figured a player like him, if we can take that athleticism and teach him the parts of that position that are important, he could become very valuable. And, you know, he didn't have a goal scored for us all season, and he scored the two most important goals of our entire year to win the championship. And he was so happy. I was with him after the match, and he couldn't be more happy. And I think he's created value for himself. He's created value for our team. At one point towards the end of the match, we had three of our African players on the pitch at the same time. So I think we've disrupted a little bit the model that, you know, the only foreigners that can succeed in Mexico are from South America. I think we've proven that foreigners coming from completely different places, I mean, they've all three learned English. They've adapted. They've worked really hard. They've done a lot of their job. But that's a big part of recruiting, is making sure not only do you get the athleticism, but you get the ability to learn and to adapt and to take on new challenges. And I think that's something we've done well with these young men.
He's Jeff Luno, Blue Crow Sports Group here. Amazing story with Cancun FC winning the title. Leganés in the Spanish second division currently is number one, looking for a straightforward jump into La Liga. That would be something spectacular. Just to kind of get back to your coach, Luis Arce, he's 32 years of age. You know, when you win like this, as you know better than anybody, yeah, everybody comes for your assets.
Yeah.
All right. They covet your assets. Are you getting people inquiring about your coach, your players?
We know it's going to happen, but Luis, with the way we structure his contracts, is if he has success, he's going to, you know, we're going to commit longer to him and he's going to commit longer to us. Obviously, there's, you know, if he gets an opportunity to go coach in the first division somewhere, we're not going to prevent him from doing that because we want to be known. I mean, one of the things, I visited Red Bull Salzburg a few years back, and it was great to see that they have this attitude that coaches also want to go there because they know they're going to go straight from there to the Bundesliga or to the Premier League, et cetera, and they've had a track record of that. I'd love to be known as an organization that develops coaches as well as players. That being said, I really like Luis Arce to stick around and help us get promoted to Liga MX. So he's terrific. You know, he was in Bolivia when we found him, but we knew him. He worked in the youth system for Puebla, which Jonathan Himmelfarb, our sporting director, also worked there. His cousin was a head coach in the Mexican league. And he is just such a smart, hardworking guy that communicates well with everybody. And he wants to be a winner. And that's, you know, he's already got one under his belt, and hopefully there'll be more to come.
All right. So I move this forward here. Baseball, do you miss it?
I do. And fortunately, you know, a couple of our my partners, my co-investors are from the world of baseball, both former, you know, investors in or current investors in other clubs, as well as some players. I've watched the Astros every year since I left. I still live in town. I'm still right here next to it. And I do miss it. But the reality is, to me, the world of football is where I'm meant to be right now. It's so fascinating. And the fact that I got to lift a trophy in baseball and just a few days ago lift a trophy in football, you know, to me, that means everything, because I'm a novice. I'm an outsider in sports, always have been. But I think there's things that I bring to the table that maybe don't exist as much in some of these sports. And the fact that I've been able to demonstrate that maybe a slightly unique or different way of doing things can lead to positive results, you know, gives every person with an engineering degree or every management consultant who studied economics the dream of someday being able to lift a trophy on a stage together with a team.
Yeah, it's remarkable stuff. And welcome into Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. 713, call now, daspitlaw.com. We continue on with the best of Soccer Matters. We're talking to Jeff Luno, Blue Crow Sports Group. Is that, you know, I read some articles where you said, well, I'm not the biggest knowledgeable guy about global football. Yet isn't that part of the allure, I think, is to get that opinion that's outside the box? And obviously, you're so refined in, you know, data and analytics and all these things. You're obviously proven. But is the outside perspective something you seek out? And how much of that do you take? And how much of it is the naked eye? And, you know, all those things, the traditional soccer guy with the outsider kind of.
Well, it's a good question. I think for me, my area of expertise, I'm not a scout. You know, I was never a scout in baseball and I'm not a scout in football. There are a lot of people better than me that looking at a game and telling me who the best player is and why. That being said, what I am an expert at is making decisions. And decisions are so important in the sports world, and the risk of making the wrong decision can sink a franchise. And that's what I became really good at in my 16 years in baseball, is helping my clubs make the best decisions. Now, how do you make the best decisions? You need to have all the information that's going to help you make the decisions. You're going to have the perspective of the scout. You're going to have the perspective of the coach, the trainer, the psychologist, the data analytics person, all of the people that have a point of view. You need to be able to bring all that information together, have it there and ready for you when you need to make the decision. And, you know, in these transfer windows last August, September 1st, you know, we had to make a decision in the last half hour of the window, a major decision, whether to bring Miguel de la Fuente to Leganés or not. And it was going to be a costly decision if it was wrong. Now, he's now leading our team in goals, and he's one of the reasons we're in first place. January is the same thing. You know, you have to have the information, but you have to have it available to you at a time when you can make the decisions. And then you need to figure out how to balance, how much do I weigh the sporting opinion versus the psychologist versus the doctor's opinion versus the coach's desire, all of that. And I think that's where I have 20 years experience in the world of sports, helping my organizations make decisions. And the reality is, all I have to do is be a little better than average to create some real value for the organization. Because no matter what, just like, you know, in sports executing, there's going to be times when you succeed, times when you fail on every game. In the world of making decisions in sports, your failure rate is exceptionally high. So high that if you did it in business, you'd be out of business. But in the world of sports, if you're just right 52% of the time and the other guys are right 48% of the time, you're gonna win championships that way. And that's our philosophy.
Fascinating. He's Jeff Flunow, Blue Crow Sports Group. Okay, so going back to, you know, making decisions, is it as simple as, okay, we're going to get input from eight people and majority rules? Or are there times you don't go with the majority rules because of gut instinct? I mean, that to me is what's fascinating, because a lot of times people can play it off. Well, it's collaborative. It's a group. You said it. I make decisions. But how does that, you know, how does that work in your mind? Is it a majority rules when you get all this input?
No, it's not majority rules. But what I do like to have in general is some construct beforehand about how we're going to make the decision. How much is the scouting opinion going to weigh into it? How much is the medical opinion a red flag, or is it a go, no go decision? You know, how much do the economics play into it? The risk assessment that our financial analyst has. You know, a lot of times these contracts look really good in the first year, but by the third, fourth year, they're sinking the franchise. So all of that has to come into play. You know, at the end of the day, we try and develop some sort of decision-making model beforehand, just to keep ourselves accountable, because it's hard not to let emotion take over in the final moments when the press is screaming. I mean, the last transfer window, I had fans, it was midnight. I had fans off the balcony of my office screaming up there saying, you know, we want a player, we want to, and you tend to want to respond as a human being to these things, but you have to be disciplined and you have to do what's right for the organization. So that being said, every decision at the end of the day has some sense of that sort of, what do I feel is the right thing to do? I can't really explain it using numbers, but I feel like this is the right thing to do. You know, I felt that way when we traded for Justin Verlander back in 2017. And even though the economic model said it's not a value creating move, you know, I knew at that point that the first championship for the Astros was, you know, you couldn't measure the impact of that, and bringing a pitcher in like him was going to help us win that championship. So I kind of ignored the rational part and went for the emotional part. I think there comes times when you have to do that. But if you make a habit of making emotional decisions, you end up over investing in players or systems that aren't going to really give you the return that you want. And that's a big problem.
Fascinating stuff here. Jeff, as far as picking a manager, I mean, it's not like picking a player, right? I mean, you can't go see if he's explosive over 2 yards, or, you know, if he penetrates down the right side, or, you know, if his data shows him getting into the final third. So does data play any singular part in picking a baseball manager or a soccer manager?
Well, I think there's different the world of soccer. I've realized it's a totally different ballgame in terms of the leader on the pitch, because the pressure when the team loses. Now, this is true in all sports, but when the team loses, it's the manager's fault. And when the team wins, you know, maybe the manager gets credit, probably, but you're going to lose, and the pressure is going to be there to make a change. And there's really, from the fans and the media perspective, it's the only lever you have to change a team's fortunes is to swap out the manager. You know, in baseball, I was fortunate to hire a guy like AJ Hinch. And through the good times and the bad times, I could stick with him because I knew that he was doing things the right way. In football, it's much, much harder. I had to let go both my managers of Cancun and Leganés last year, not because I didn't, you know, think they were doing a good job, but really there was no other choice at that point based on the results of the team. That being said, you know, we look at decisions they've made in the past. We look at, you know, how their game model is, all of that. But we have a very thorough process of selecting our managers. And to give you an example, Borja Jimenez, who's also one of the up-and-coming young managers in Spain, I spoke to 5 players that were on his teams in the last few years. I spoke to both of the presidents that he worked for. I spoke to, you know, agents that knew him. I spoke to just about everybody I could to really develop a complete profile of who this person is. And he interviewed not just with me and our sporting director, but with 5 other people in our organization. And he went up against 4 other candidates. And he was not the first choice for all of the interviewers. I will say he was my first choice from the beginning. And at the end of the day, he became the consensus first choice, and it's been a no-brainer so far. And I think with both him and Luis, we're lucky. We have young coaches who are going to have huge careers in front of them, but they're helping our teams be successful right now, which is the most important thing.
Interesting. Data, are you worried that we're getting overdated in the world of sports? Could there be a worry with that, you think? Because It seems to me everybody's got to validate their position in an organization. And
yeah,
I mean, I can only imagine how much data flows to people.
Yeah, there's a lot of data. And the thing about data, it's kind of like a politician with facts. You can find facts to support whatever position you want, whether you're, you know, for or against global warming. You can find plenty of facts to support your point of view. And to a certain extent in sports, you have the same thing. You can always sort of massage the information to help you support a decision that you've made. Apologize, there's an ambulance going by behind here, but you know, for me, it's having done it now for 20 years, there is a role for data. It's important, but you also have to truly understand the limitations of the data, because the data, you know, it doesn't know the personality. It doesn't know the drive of the human being. It doesn't know the dynamics of how people react when there's adversity and all of that. And there's different ways to get at that stuff, but the best way is to actually get to know the player or the coach. And that's, you know, observing them firsthand and getting to know them firsthand.
Yeah. It's like the last game, the Dynamo were in 70% of the possession, but it doesn't quantify what happened. And it's up to people that are commentators to explain why that 70% possession was in their own half of the field or in the middle third. So it is interesting. But you know, you now have coaches even quoting expected goals and everything. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think that's okay. I mean, I want my coaches to know what the data means and when it's useful. You know, for me, the worst outcome is that a coach makes a decision and there was data available to help him make a better decision, but he didn't either know it or want it, or it wasn't provided to him. I think that's the worst outcome. I trust everybody that works for me to make their own decisions as long as they have all the information they need or whatever we can provide them. And so our coaches know I will never tell them they have to play a certain player or play a certain game model. But I do want to know what their thought process was both before and after. Why did you make that change in the 60th minute? you know, just so that, I mean, that's what I used to do with AJ Hinch your baseball. Why did you make that pitching change? Not as an accusatory, you know, but I just wanted to understand how he thinks. And he would always tell me, well, you know, the guy's pinky was bothering him. They're always the right reasons, but it's good to have that dialogue. So I think that really applies in this case as well.
Excellent. Two quick ones, and then we're going to finish it. This is exceptional. Sure. Jeff, really enjoying this. I think we could go on forever here because it's a fascinating discussion. All right. As far as data, though, can't that be used sometimes as a fallback position for lacking success?
Yeah. I mean, I think there are.
By coaches.
I do think so. I mean, you know, a big part of being a coach is explaining what happened in the game after a loss. And, you know, if you, you know, sometimes I think you can say, look, I made these decisions for this reason and it didn't work out, because no matter what part sport you're in, luck plays a huge part in it, and you can make all the right decisions and still not be successful. But, you know, I think if you rely only on information provided to you by the front office to make decisions and you're following it sort of like by script, then, you know, that could be a huge problem, I think.
Last one. I think I know that you had an inkling or an interest in MLS potentially and investing in Major League Soccer. Thoughts on that.
I'm very bullish about MLS. I think with all the investment that's been made, there's a lot of really good owners in the MLS. We looked at the possibility of doing something in MLS a few years back when we were just getting into this. To us at the time, the valuations were too high relative to other buying opportunities in Europe and other parts of Mexico and other places. That being said, you know, there continues to be interest in the MLS from the ownership and investment standpoint. And, you know, I think that there are some teams that are profitable, some teams that are not, like in most leagues. With the World Cup coming here, it's a golden opportunity to take soccer, you know, and establish it as one of the primary American sports. Having said that, I was living in the U.S. in 94 when we had the same opportunity back then, and it didn't really happen the way we thought it was. So I think MLS needs to be able to support itself irrespective of what's going on elsewhere. It's the only league in the world with a closed system. I think it's much harder for a closed system to be successful long term because, you know, come the end of the season, the teams in last place aren't playing for anything. Come the end of a season in Spain, the last week of May and first week of June is the most exciting week on the calendar in the Premier League, in Spain, in Italy, in France, in Germany, all over Europe, because every team is playing something. If you're not playing for promotion or a spot in Europe, you're playing to avoid relegation or you're playing for extra TV money. And every goal, every moment is super important. And it changes how the next generation engages with the sport, where it's really like the most important thing in their lives during that time. And obviously MLS has great teams and a lot of passion, but that's a handicap relative to other leagues that I think over long term has to be handled.
Yeah, I think people recognize the lack of consequence. So you coming from baseball and playoffs, I'm getting the sense here you're a promotion and relegation guy now.
I am all in on promotion and relegation. I think until you've lived through it and you've seen it firsthand, you realize the value that it truly creates. I mean, first of all, you know, every town has a chance to dream of being in first division. It doesn't matter if you're Luton Town or who you are. You can dream that your team's going to be in first division. And those dreams keep interest, keep hope alive, and keep the whole system going. So I love it. I'm a huge fan of it. And I wish it would happen in the States. I know it's not really practical given the amount of money people spend for those franchises. But in Mexico, it absolutely needs to happen. I think Mexico, if they copy the closed system, is going to have some real challenges.
Well, Jeff, this has been very enlightening. Thank you so much. Been a lot of fun talking to you. And I think after this interview, there's a few more Cancun FC and Leganés fans now in Spain. So listen, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And you answered the call very quickly. So from me to you, I say thank you very much for being a part of this.
Okay. Thanks for having me on, Glenn.
All right. It's the one and only Jeff Luno, Lou Crow Sports Group. We'll take a break. More to come here on Soccer Matters. Our next guest is a former Houston area soccer player, went on to play at the University of Cincinnati, ultimately left college early for a professional career, winning two MLS Cups, played with the LA Galaxy, Columbus, amongst a number of other teams. But the real point here is that this is a Houston area player, grew up on parks like Bear Creek and Meyer, that has come back now to be involved in player development in Houston with Kingdom and the Houston Rangers, who just were selected for the new MLS, the ongoing MLS Next competition. He is Josh Gardner. He joins us now. Josh, thank you very much for coming on the show.
No, thanks for having me, Glenn.
All right, just for my listeners, explain to them what MLS Next is and then where your involvement in it comes in.
Yeah, so MLS started this this league a while back just to allow all their youth academies to be playing against each other. And since the leagues have developed and grown, we've added a lot more clubs around the nation who have good programs, boys programs. Obviously some girls are joining those teams as well, going on to sign, you know, professional contracts and stuff. But it allows our youth in our area to play against the top players in the nation who are projected to go professionally with their current MLS club. So we're honored and excited for the opportunity to bring MLS Next to the Katy area, which is where I'd spent most of my days playing. And there's just a hotbed of players out here that we want to really work with and develop and give them the opportunities that we had growing up in the Houston area.
All right. This is under 19 down to under 13. There's also two other teams. Obviously, the Houston Dynamo are in MLS Next. And is it TFC Total Football Club?
Yeah, so TFC, I think, just merged with GFI, which is new global football innovation, which I think is great. They're moving up to the spring. They've got a beautiful facility. They called me, and when they found out we were announced, and they said, listen, anything you guys need, let us know. And, you know, we want to work together to, you know, honestly, just build the league. I think, you know, in big markets like Houston and Dallas, obviously see in Los Angeles, the amount of MLS Next clubs in those areas, we have very strong players in Houston that need to have access to the highest league. And that's what we're doing here with the Houston Rangers.
Josh Gardner, former Houston area player, running the club Houston Rangers in MLS Next. I mean, this is a big accomplishment to get selected. How big of an undertaking is this for you?
You know, I think a lot of people don't realize, they're like, how did you get it so fast and all this stuff? And what I don't think they understand that the group that is coming into Houston actually runs seven different MLS Next clubs, seven or eight different MLS Next clubs. So they were invited to bring a club into Houston, which would be their ninth. And then they also have one in Dallas that just was announced too, the Dallas Hornets, I believe. So they're running, they also run RGV, RSL Arizona. So they have different MLS Next clubs. So I think when people ask me, since I'm from Houston, well, how did you get MLS Next so fast? I tell them, this is a long storied, you know, successful endeavor that this group has done in MLS. So MLS trusts them with, you know, the product that they're going to bring out. But it also goes back to me completing my French license when I was at Sporting KC through MLS, and having that knowledge of the game and how we develop players in the academies at Sporting. And then obviously when I came here and worked with players, you know, locally, they knew that I was the man for the job, and really excited about the staff we're putting together. And, you know, the amount of attention and interest that we've had in a quick amount of time. We've got a meeting tonight at 7, and I'm pretty sure we've already, you know, maxed out the room, so we might have to make a second meeting after that. So it's been a very good and exciting time here in Houston.
He's Josh Gardner. Houston Rangers have been added to MLS Next. According to an MLS article on MLSsoccer.com, 90% of the current youth national team player pools, 90% for the U.S. and Canada, come out of the MLS Next. Now, look, you've been very committed to player development. You grew up on these fields. I first want to take you into the pride of having played in this city, now full circle after, you know, college in Cincinnati, coming back here after a long career in Major League Soccer, winning MLS Cups, winning a USL Championship. But the additional maybe unique pride that you have being a former player from here, you know, to go on with the list of a whole bunch of guys, you know, from this area, Rusty Pierce, Chris Bondi, the Baba Brothers, Alex Quill. Woods, a whole bunch of guys that played, and I'm omitting a bunch of them. But how about that local Houston pride that you bring to this?
I think that's the most exciting part is growing up on these fields and seeing these guys and the culture that we had back in the, you know, mid-90s, early 2000s was just a different culture, a different vibe, a different feeling. And I think what we're seeing now is all those guys are still committed to the Houston area. Now their kids are playing soccer and they're growing up. So now we feel that it's our job as, native Houstonians to bring that culture back so that we can start developing players and giving them the opportunities. Now, is everybody going to turn professional? No. However, can we get them into very good Division I schools, NAIA schools, Division II, Division III? Absolutely. And I think you're seeing, you know, the Bondies of this world. They're coaching at very good universities at UConn. You know, you've got Chad Riley, who's at Notre Dame. So like these guys who grew up in the Houston area are still impacted in the game. And I think that's because of how we grew up. So for me to give that opportunity to the players here in Houston, and hopefully we just want to grow the game, right? We want Houston soccer to be a mecca of, you know, quality players. And when people come here to play, they're like, man, it's tough to play in Houston. And that's really our vision.
So your commitment to player development, I do know it's a big one, and you've worked with every age level on down to the little itty bittiest of players, really, really young kids. How are you going to keep this personal now? Because I know that's part of your mantra as this grows bigger and keep your club in unique in your ideology and the way you see player development.
You know, so my club, we started back in, I would say, August of last year, and I think we have over 120 people registered for tryouts coming out next week, which is super exciting. And I think the biggest part of how we work and develop the players is, first, every kid has a name. They're not just a number. They're not just a monetary value. They have a value within themselves of how they play, right? Every kid has a personality, and we want to nurture that and steer them in the right direction. We have kids who have come from difficult soccer experiences as youth, and so we've created a safe environment for them to explore and to have freedom to make mistakes, to learn from those mistakes. We never get on to kids because obviously they're kids and they're learning, but we want to be able to teach them the ways of the game in a safe environment. And so for us to keep that small culture, you know, what I've really focused on is how we create a family oriented feeling. We can't grow too fast. We're going to be more selective at some point, Glenn, which is the hard part, because it's hard for me to turn a kid away, especially when I know the abilities I have to help them develop as a player. And the Houston Rangers have been very supportive and saying, listen, we want you to continue working with Kingdom Football Academy. I know that's your priority. However, Houston Rangers is such a great opportunity for our kids to develop through our youth system and have the opportunity and ability to move into an MLS Next program, where now they're being challenged against the top players in the nation.
You know, as I look around the youth community, I see these big, bold claims and marketing moves by teams. And, you know, we're changing the environment and, you know, all these things. Do we have to be careful with that? Because sometimes I see over-marketing here. I see advantage maybe being taken of parents, pathway to the pros. I like the fact that you mentioned not everybody's going to be a pro, and you have to keep the reality of the situation in check. So how important is communication with parents? Nothing can ever be perfect, right? Because parents have different ambitions when they're bringing kids to clubs. But how important is, you know, communicating with the parental set?
I think transparency is the biggest key. You know, I had a training session last night, and just I ended it early. The kids continued training with our coaches, and I went and talked to the parents, and, you know, they were concerned about how is this going to affect our kids' development when you're obviously running Houston Rangers. And I said, listen, nothing's going to change. My schedule is going to get busier. But I'm going to still have that attention and to detail and focus on every single player that we have. In our player evaluations, I'm not just copying and pasting because every kid is different. So it's that personal feel. But I think, you know, it's these clubs have done a great job in marketing what they do. And I think we also have to educate the parents as saying, if you're, and that's what I tell parents, if you're happy where you're at, please stay there. If they're doing a good job coaching and developing your kids, like, I want you to be there. You know, there's some great programs in the Houston area, girls and boys programs and clubs that are doing a great job with their players, their player pool. And so if they're happy there, we want them to stay there. I'm never going to say you need to come to us because we're going to be around. We know what we're doing. We're confident in our abilities to develop. And, you know, we're going to be supportive of the other groups in the Houston market.
Yeah, I like that attitude. Do you think there can be more camaraderie from that respect, or maybe where does that lie right now? Because we always listen to the divisive nature, and listen, this has affected the Houston Dynamo as well over the past years. But we always, you know, when it gets over the top, ultra competitive, and things get a little bit unsavory. I mean, can that be improved? Where do you see the overall health of, you know, maybe all the oars pulling in the same direction for the Houston youth soccer community?
You know, I've had long discussions with a lot of soccer people here in Houston. And I think for me that, I mean, how many different leagues do we have in Houston? You've got MLS Next, you've got ECNL, you have ECRL, you have now is USCRL, you have a USC league. In my opinion, if Houston could come together and say, we're going to create one league with different divisions and you win your division and you move up, you know, I feel like that's how we're going to develop players faster. It's difficult, right? Cause everybody wants to keep their kids separate from different clubs. You know, sadly, I feel like we haven't done a good job. It's become not a tit for tat, but like we focus more on like the relationships that we have with different, you know, adults in different clubs, whereas we're here to develop kids, right? We're here to grow the passion and you know, they are the product that we want to put out there, right? And so how we develop those kids, we want to give them those opportunities. And I think we've gone away from player development and we've gone into, you know, the money side of things, which is obviously the ugliest part of it. And if parents are investing in their kids, there's a lot of money that goes into investing in player or in youth development, right? So what's our end goal? Do we want these kids to go to Division III and get a no soccer scholarship? And you could have done that getting good grades, or do we want to try and get them a soccer scholarship so now the return on their investment was worth it, right? That's the hardest part is, you know, we got to put the kid back on the top and we got to make sure that that's our main focus.
What about simply lighting the fire of passion underneath youth soccer? But look, you've had a lot of teammates that you grew up playing youth soccer with that are now coaching, that played in college, mm-hmm. that have passed on the love of the game. What about simply just the love of the game and somebody growing up one day to be a parent that loves the sport and contributes to it? Or goes and buys a ticket for a Houston Dynamo game.
Yeah, no, that's the biggest thing, right? So we have our club night in a couple of weeks at the Dynamo game. And we were trying to figure out what an end of season, you know, party or whatever. And I was like, let's go to Dynamo, right? Let's go support our professional club. They're doing really well right now, you know, have a good run of results at home. But the greatest part, Glenn, honestly, is seeing the guys that I grew up with now running clubs in Houston, starting little clubs because they want to develop kids. That's the best part about it is, you know, those relationships that I have or I have now or had with guys who I grew up with either in high school or club that are still impacting the game in Houston.
Josh Gardner, he will be heading up Houston Rangers. They were selected for MLS Next. They will field teams from under 19 to under 13 based out in the Katy area. This is exciting news for Houston. There was another Texas team added, the Dallas Hornets, as Josh mentioned as well. There are 133 MLS Next programs or clubs in the United States. As we continue on here, you know, you are a father of children, so you have a unique perspective on this. You have a lot of kids. Talk a little bit about your family.
Yeah, so my wife and I, we have five kids, and we had a kid in different states. Each kid was born in a different state, which is kind of funny, only because I was a journeyman in MLS in LA and Seattle, Columbus, Montreal, North Carolina, and then in sporting. And we had two kids in Kansas City. One was born in Missouri. The other one was born in Kansas, which is kind of funny. But yeah, it's, you know, whenever you have children, I think your mindset changes whenever you coach. I think somebody who doesn't necessarily has kids yet might not fit in the younger generations of youth development because they can't relate to that age of player. Our oldest is 13, our youngest is 2. And like you said earlier, Glenn, I've worked with a lot of different ages growing up. I started coaching a young team in LA when I was playing with Galaxy because I had a lot of free time, right? But I also love being around the kids and working with them. So I think your perspective changes whenever you have children. I'm not saying some people can't relate to it. I just know that my heart goes to every kid that I work with. And, you know, I not only want to help them develop as a soccer player, but with the mental side of the game, with the outside parts of it, how can we create good citizens and, you know, people who are going to grow the game, but also be very good at what they do when they're done playing. Because not everybody's going to play until they're, I mean, who's a lot of times, what, 40? Is he still playing, I think? I mean, I'm 40. I would love to keep playing. I just can't do it. So it's one of those things.
All right, Josh Gardner, it's MLS Next, Houston Rangers, just selected. Exciting news for the Katy area, the Houston soccer community as well. Josh, just a little bit, you know, I fully understand your commitment to player development, how serious you take that. You know, there's lots of fancy words in the world of soccer now. We're throwing data out. We're throwing expected goals. Coaches are cherry picking things to defend their positions. It's different. It's different for sure, but game model's another one everybody loves to bring out. So it's interesting how rhetoric and certain words are collected by people, but game model, your core principles, what would they be?
So my game model, obviously I want let's go back to the player. I want every player to be confident on the ball and to be able to make the right decisions when it's necessary. I think everybody talks about, you know, playing out of the back and, you know, playing through the thirds. Well, is that the right decision whenever a team is playing in a mid block and they've got 11 players or 10 players between, you know, the halfway line and they're 18 or whatever, and we're just passing sideways not to go forward. So, you know, I'm a possession based player. I was instilled in that in a long time ago, but I also recognize that if we're not progressing towards goal, the result in possession should be to get a shot on goal or score, right? If it's just to keep the ball, then what's the point in it, right? So that's really, I want every single player to be very confident on the ball, to be able to see the game the way we see it. If we got to break lines or break thirds to bypass, you know, a high line, we're going to do that. You know, I don't think we develop enough forwards in our country. We have some very good ones at the national team, but if you look at it, in my opinion, we create very good defenders, right? Goalkeepers, especially. And maybe that's because we're trying to play out of the back and we lose it and now guys are shooting. But how are we going to create those forwards who can, you know, beat a guy on a dribble and, you know, use their speed to break a line? Are we playing those passes? So we also want to be very direct. Our first option, if we can win the ball, can we play forward? And if not, then we have to look to move the ball so we can, you know, I guess, manipulate the defensive team and play through them when they open up.
Josh, listen, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate this. We're going to keep track of Houston Rangers, the newest entry into MLS Next. So I assume you'll ultimately be playing other MLS teams, going on the road and things like that. Does Major League Soccer subsidize travel? I mean, because, you know, like you may have to play in Chicago, right?
Yeah. So our Frontier Conference mainly stays in Texas. I think we have maybe a trip to the Colorado Rapids, to Sporting Kansas City. But Glenn, when you go to these events that MLS put on, I mean, you're seeing national team scouts, you're seeing national team coaches, you're seeing top Division I programs, you're seeing scouts for MLS clubs, you're seeing MLS teams. So you're like, the environment is completely different. I was just spending time doing match evaluating at the GA Cup with the U15s and 17s, getting my talent scout license through U.S. Soccer, and we're watching games, and I'm sitting next to, you know, a couple of national team coaches and scouts watching their players perform, and we're also trying to identify players that should be on their radar. So it's just a different mindset, man. It's really neat to see. And you know, a kid in our market should be able to, who's good enough, should be able to have the opportunity to be, you know, I don't want to say put on a pedestal, but put in front of these guys. So, you know, they can have an opportunity to maybe they fit Portland Timbers playing model, right? Maybe they fit their, you know, maybe they fit Houston Dynamo. Like, we want to be in good relationships with all these clubs, especially Houston Dynamo, because they're in our backyard and they're our home team. Let's push kids there. Let's give them an opportunity to sign contracts, which is what they want, or go on to play at very good schools.
Okay. We don't have enough time to go into the next phase of what you just said. We'll save that for a next interview. Josh, thank you very much. Congratulations. Best of luck. And there's nothing better than a guy that grew up playing on the fields in Houston coming back to aid and be a part of the growth of the Houston soccer community. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Glenn. I appreciate you.